On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Wisconsin health officials have asked people who travel to countries with widespread COVID-19 to self-quarantine for 14 days. At least 22 patients in the U.S. have died from COVID-19, and at least 545 people have been treated for the virus at last check this morning. Are you worried about the coronavirus epidemic and want to know what precautions you should take? What do you think of Wisconsin's response so far? What do you want to know about how the state is preparing? We're at 800-642-1234. Tom Haupt is Influenza Surveillance Coordinator for the Wisconsin Department of Health Services, Division of Public Health. Tom, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Oh, thanks, Kate. I appreciate the invitation to talk to your listeners.
So we've seen California, we've seen Florida, Maryland, other states calling a state of emergency. Last week, your health department officials said that step wasn't warranted, not needed. Why do you not think so?
Well, at this point, we only have the one confirmed case. We have increased our testing capabilities significantly over the past week and a half to 2 weeks, and we'll continue to increase our testing capabilities now that several commercial labs are coming online as well. But again, because we only have the one confirmed case, we feel confident that it does not need a state of emergency at this point, but that could change very quickly, and we're prepared to make that change should it become necessary.
And certainly hospital workers would be on the front lines of responding to an outbreak. How is the state health department checking in with them, checking on whether everyone has the supplies they need?
Yes, we actually are doing a daily survey with hospitals to try to find out what their needs might be, where the shortages might be. As you know, people are starting to hoard a lot of the face masks and gloves, that type of thing. We really want them to leave them for the healthcare workers who really need them, who, like you said, are on the front lines of preventing coronavirus.
Do the state's hospitals have enough beds and respirators and face masks and all the other equipment that we can't even think of? Is that on hand right now, or is there extra ordering? What is the status?
Well, at this point, we feel we have enough of the ventilators and the supplies. But again, that's why we have to keep up with the with our providers on a daily basis. They need to tell us what the situation is, what the needs are. We're trying to work very hard to get their needs should they become short, whether it's personal protective equipment, ventilators, whatever the case may be. There's surge capacity plans going out, which we used in 2009 influenza pandemic. So we feel very confident in what we're doing right now, but part of the whole situation is to really reach out to our partners on a daily basis and find out what their needs are and have them communicate back to us.
Well, let's bring in a call. Peter in Viroqua. Good morning, Peter.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I'm wondering if there's a state policy that's been communicated to the county health department in regards to, you know, if a family has been like in Italy and they're coming back, and will their children be in school right away?
That's a real good question, Peter. Thanks for asking that. And we have policies in place that if we find out about someone who has come back from Italy, they are put on a 14-day quarantine, which means their children should not be going to school. It's a self-imposed quarantine, but where we had the situation with the people coming back from China, we actually got formal notices. So we don't always get that when people are coming back from Italy. So we depend on people to really reach out to us as well, and they've been very good about this and understanding that we have a need for the quarantine, and they've been very compliant. But it's a very good question.
So, Tom, when you when you look at the supply situation and you compare it with 2009 following the H1N1 outbreak, in retrospect, did declaring that emergency prove to be helpful? And what comparisons, what lessons learned did you have from the H1N1 outbreak?
Absolutely. I mean, we did learn an awful lot. Even though it was considered a relatively mild pandemic, it was still a pandemic in 2009. Many after-action reports to try to figure out what went right, what went wrong, and we're using that to modify our policies with the coronavirus. So we're, again, one of the things that we really want to do is keep reaching out to our providers to find out what the needs are. We need them to come back and talk to us. We need to open those lines of communication even more than what we already have.
We're reviewing Wisconsin's preparations for an outbreak of COVID-19 with an official from the state health department. Tom Haupt is with us, the agency's influenza surveillance coordinator. Gathering your questions for him, do you know someone who has had COVID-19? How have they dealt with it? How has your family dealt with it? Are you worried about misinformation about the virus? Join in 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So the president signed this $8 billion package on Friday by Congress to address COVID-19. Tom, how could more federal dollars help Wisconsin's preparations?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're very appreciative of getting that money from the federal government. That money can be used for personnel. We're in, trying to bring people on board as we speak to help out should this become a state of emergency. So that can help out with personnel costs. It can also help out with purchasing further personal protective equipment should that be needed. The final decision as to how to use that money is through the Department of Health Services, and they're working probably on a daily basis to get some kind of a plan together as to how to use this money wisely and efficiently.
How much does our state response to COVID-19 rely on the success of what's happening at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention or other federal health authorities?
Absolutely. I mean, the CDC is the one who starts off with the recommendations, and we need to follow their recommendations as closely as we possibly can. We don't want people coming up with their own policies and procedures. We've seen that in the past where people have gone out on their own and really have made the situation much worse, where the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. So we are following very closely the recommendations from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. There are conference calls almost daily going on, you know, between the states and the Centers for Disease Control. Yes, they're very important in our response.
Herbie from Cambria called in, couldn't stay with us. Herbie understands there is no vaccine yet. And so what does treatment look like for the patients who have COVID-19 right now? What is the treatment protocol?
Really, there is no treatment at this point. There are some experimental drugs that they're working on to see if it's going to be effective against the COVID-19. And as Herbie mentioned, we don't have a vaccine, but the vaccine itself is progressing very well, and they're hoping to get into clinical trials in April or May, which, when you think about it, is really quite impressive. How many other diseases do we have that have gone many, many years without a vaccine? HIV, for an example, when it was discovered back in the 1970s, still does not have a vaccine. So there is definite work going, and it is looking very optimistic that there may be a vaccine perhaps by the end of the year, but we'll just have to wait and see. Again, the vaccines have to go through safety trials. They have to go through effectiveness trials, but we are optimistic.
Tom, explain for us what the symptoms look like and when someone should seek help and how they should do it.
Well, the symptoms are very similar to most respiratory viruses. It can be very mild, which could be cough, congestion, mild fever. But many of the cases that you hear about with COVID-19 are the severe cases, which hit the people who are most susceptible, and that would be people who are older, the very young, and people who have underlying illness, whether it's due to medical conditions or medications that they might be on. That can actually lead to pneumonia and, unfortunately, as you mentioned, numerous deaths due to the COVID-19. People need to, if they feel that they have underlying illnesses, regardless if it's COVID-19 or not, then they become down with a fever, congestion, they need to contact a provider because there are many, many other viruses, including influenza, that are going around at very high rates at this time.
Let's take another call. Russ in Stoughton. Good morning, Russ.
Good morning. I would like to know if Tom has had any contact with Vice President Mike Pence, who's been appointed as the country's coordinator to get the virus under control. Is he reaching out to people in Tom's position or what?
Russ, thanks. And Tom, you know, you've had those conference calls with the CDC. What other federal connections are there?
The Department of Health Services out of Washington is also very involved with this as well. And no, I have not had personal contact with Vice President Pence, but I have had a lot of contact with the people at CDC. They call them the patient under investigation clinicians, and those have been my main contacts. But it's basically Vice President Pence, Department of Health Services, FDA is involved, CDC, all coordinated through Washington.
Going back to 2009, again, some Wisconsin schools were closed during the H1N1 outbreak. What did health officials learn about whether those closures were a good step?
I believe that if they were done for long periods of time, it did affect the transmission of the disease. We have several studies going on, even locally in Wisconsin, where we're looking to see if spring break can stop transmission, if there's a long weekend for whatever reason, whether it's a school meetings day or whatever, that if that can break transmission. And it's been optimistic that that could actually break the transmission. But what we do depend on is when people are asked to not go to schools and public gatherings, that they really comply with our recommendations, because we don't want them going out, spreading it to other people in things like a movie theater or concerts, that type of thing. So we really want them to comply with our recommendations as much as we can, but the separation can actually have a big effect.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that spring break might be that pause that would help here, but wouldn't people be going off in all sorts of different directions over spring break?
Absolutely, and that's another possibility that we have to think about, too. It might break transmission within a local jurisdiction, but if people are traveling while they're sick, and many times during spring break, plans are made many months beforehand, so they can't really stop, they can't really make those last-minute changes. Traveling sick, and this is where we're asking people to use common sense and work with us. If they have to travel and they are coughing, sneezing, they can wear a mask. It's not a problem. But just to wear a mask throughout the entire day is not something that we recommend. But your point is very well taken. It could actually cause worse problems in other jurisdictions, but it may actually stop some transmissions locally.
Tom Haupt is with us, influenza surveillance coordinator for the State Health Department, taking your questions about COVID-19, 800-642-1234. Back in a moment here on the Ideas Network. It's the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. Health leaders coordinating Wisconsin's reaction to COVID-19 say that the risk of infection remains low in our state. Only one person in Wisconsin has tested positive, and they have since recovered. Meanwhile, Milwaukee health officials say it's not if, but when the Milwaukee Health Department expects a COVID-19 outbreak in the city, but how many people the virus will affect or when it will arrive is unknown. Do you know someone who has COVID-19? How have they dealt with it? What do you want to know about how it's spread? Join in 800-642-1234. Tom Haupt is the influenza surveillance coordinator for the State Health Department, and he stays with us. Let's go to another call now. Mike is with us from Madison. Hi, Mike. Go ahead.
Hello. Yes. I've been seeing on the news where different countries are out spraying for the virus, and they're wiping down surfaces in schools and so forth. But to me, my understanding was viruses don't last but a few hours or maybe a day outside of a host. Is there something special about this particular virus that it has a longer resiliency? I would think just staying out of the area for a day would pretty much eradicate the virus.
That's a really good question, Mike. Thanks for bringing that up. The COVID-19 virus in and of itself is very susceptible to common disinfectants used around and on everyday use. It's called an envelope virus, and what that means is the disinfectants can actually penetrate the virus itself and kill the virus. So it's not a very hardy type of virus, and the spraying that you see on TV, I don't know that that's necessary. That might be just an overreaction, but what we want people to do is just practice good hygiene and clean up behind themselves and really do a good job with the personal hygiene, coughing into your sleeve. That's how the virus is spread. It's very similar to almost all the other respiratory viruses. Nothing different with this particular virus.
We saw that the English Soccer League recently announced that its soccer players and referees will stop shaking hands during games to prevent the spread. Could we get to a point where people need to stop shaking hands?
It's a possibility. That has been brought up, especially in church services. And I know just meeting some people over the past few weeks, we did elbow bumps, which, is was strange. But again, it's something that we don't recommend at this point. If you do happen to shake hands, I mean, you always have the sanitizers. The hand sanitizers are very effective against this particular virus. But it might be something that we see more and more of as people get more and more concerned.
Well, Mike, thanks for the call. Let's go to another Mike now. Mike in Green Bay is with us. Hi there.
Hello. Hey, I appreciate all the knowledge you're giving us. So I have a question. When you go to an emergency room in a hospital and you think you have the COVID-19, how long does it take to get the results on your test back?
Well, it's going to be much quicker now that we have the commercial labs coming on board. The test itself is only like 3 to 4 hours. But one of the issues that we've run into with some difficulty in the past few weeks is getting that particular specimen to the state laboratory hygiene, which up until this week was the only laboratory in the state that could do it. So it's a matter of getting, once it gets down to a particular lab, the test itself is very quick, usually 3 to 4 hours. We have a goal at the state laboratory of hygiene of a 1 to 2 day turnaround time, and that would include transport of the specimens to the lab.
We're discussing Wisconsin's preparations for the COVID-19 with Tom Haupt, the agency's influenza surveillance coordinator. You can join in with your questions. What do you want to know about how COVID-19 is spread? Are you concerned about COVID-19 and want to know about precautions your family should take? We're at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Tom, let's look at the individual level. What steps can a family take today to better prepare themselves for a potential outbreak in Wisconsin?
Well, what we've been telling people is we don't want people to start, hoarding face masks, that type of thing. But for any kind of emergency, whether it's a natural disaster, a snowstorm, a tornado, which unfortunately hit down in Nashville, people should be prepared and have at least some water, extra water, and extra food on hand. In our particular house, we have several large buckets of water to flush the toilets. We have at least a couple of gallons of water to get us through, drinking water-wise. But people really have to stop and think, the best thing and the best way to prevent COVID-19 is through good hygiene. Respecting other people. Again, if you have to cough, use that good hygiene cough etiquette. Cough into your sleeve. If you sneeze, get into a tissue, throw it away and wash your hands right away. But as far as really cohorting things at this particular time and stocking up, that's not something we recommend at this point, other than for what you typically would have to deal with. And as I mentioned, that could be natural disasters, anything like that. Thinking again what happened in Nashville and what a tragedy that was, people need to be prepared that these things can happen very quickly.
How much are state health officials guiding state companies and businesses facing decisions like limiting business travel or working from home?
Well, we're trying to work with them and answer their questions as much as possible. One problem that we have run into a bit in the last few weeks is people, our bosses are requiring that in order to come back to work that they have to be tested for COVID-19 and test negative. But we don't test people who are not symptomatic. So we're working very closely to try to get that information across to make sure that they are aware that asymptomatic people are very low risk of spreading this particular disease. We're there to answer their questions, and there has been some guidance, again, from CDC for businesses to put out, and we want to be sure that they are know where to find these as well on our internet site and on the CDC's internet site.
Well, let's bring in Sherry now in Madison. Hi, Sherry.
Hi. Hey, I was watching TV yesterday, and the head of the NIH said that the virus lives on surfaces 7 to 9 days. Unless it's eradicated with bleach or something. So I wanted to say that. And then also that I wondered, how quickly this virus is changing, because that was also something you mentioned, that it is changing more quickly than other flu viruses. So mm-hmm. I'm thinking it could come back around and around and around if it's changing and be just a little bit different version very quickly.
Sherry, thanks. Tom?
Yeah, very good points. With every virus, there's a potential of mutations and changing, and that's why the CDC, the National Institute of Health, the World Health Organization are gathering these viruses to see if there's any particular change, to see if they could live on the environment for longer periods of time. I will caution that depending on who you talk to, some people think that the virus does stay on for, as Sherry mentioned, for days. Others feel that it's very susceptible. We do know at this particular point that the virus can be killed with just everyday disinfectants. But yes, any type of virus, especially influenza viruses and the coronaviruses, can change, and that's part of the actual surveillance system that we're working nationally and worldwide to determine.
Sherry, thanks for the call. Tom, state health officials were briefed, you briefed state lawmakers last week on COVID-19. How could lawmakers possibly get involved in the state's response at this point, depending how the outbreak shakes out?
Well, there's always that possibility of asking for more funding, you know, locally, that we may not be able to get from the federal government. But so far, it looks very promising that we're going to get a lot of reimbursement from the federal government. But we want them to be very aware and to also help get the message out to their constituents, too. Many people are calling their congressmen and assemblymen, asking what they're doing. And the more we educate them and send a consistent message, the better off we all would be. And so far, again, we've had very good cooperation with the state government.
Well, Tom, before we have to let you go, let's take a moment to discuss nursing homes. Severe symptoms are reportedly more common in the elderly populations. What is being done to make sure that nursing home long-term care facilities are ready for this?
We actually this week are planning to get a very informative message out to all long-term care facilities in the state, again, reiterating the guidance that we have said that's come from CDC. The question has come in, do they have to screen people when visitors coming in? Do they have to take their temperatures? And it hasn't got to that point yet. But we are telling people they can put signs on the door that says, please, if you have any kind of symptoms and you have to come into the nursing home, make sure you talk to the nurses first, put on a mask, or if you can perhaps avoid any kind of contact, that would be even better at this point. But we are realizing that it is a very serious situation. It's just a tragedy what happened out in Kirkland, Washington, with all those deaths at the nursing home. And somebody came into the facility who was sick and obviously didn't practice good precautions. And that's the message that we're trying to get across.
Tom, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Kate.
Yeah, Tom Haupt, Influenza Surveillance Coordinator for the State Health Department. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.